Hi, my name is Allison Mead, and welcome to What She Said, an episode of the LA FBI's podcast series. The Los Angeles Female Playwrights Initiative is dedicated to encouraging and promoting the work of female playwrights. And today I'm going to be speaking with Andrea Kuklevska, whose play Complete is currently playing at the Matrix Theater in West Hollywood. Andrea Kuklevska is an alumna of the Women's Project Playwrights Lab and is currently working on a commission from them as well. Her other plays include Human Fruit Bowl and We Play for the Gods, which have enjoyed productions and development work at the Solo Nova Arts Festival, the Prague Fringe Festival, the Amsterdam Fringe Festival, the Hong Kong Microfest, the Vera Group, Safe Mode Productions, Z-Space, The Marsh, Venue 9, and Climate Theater, among others. The recipient of the Tournesol Residency for Emerging Playwrights, and was a finalist for the Princess Grace Award. Perhaps unsurprisingly, she also has a BA in linguistics from UC Santa Cruz and an MFA in playwriting from San Francisco State University. So welcome, Andrea.
Thank you.
Complete is somewhat non-traditional in terms of its structure, so I wondered if you would talk a little bit about the development of the play from the original idea through the currently playing production of The Matrix.
Well, the structure came about because, so the structure is nonlinear. There's a present day arc that runs from the beginning to the end of the play, but then peppered throughout are what some people call flashbacks, but I don't really think of them as flashbacks, but we shift in time space to different time spaces throughout. And the play is structured that way because that, I think, mirrors the experience that a lot of people have just sort of existing here as a human on the planet. We seem to be here in our linear time space, but we're really going lots of different places in any given moment. And that's why the play is structured that way. I feel that it really represents how a lot of us are experiencing life. I wrote the first monologue for Complete. I worked with actors a lot in the development of this play from the beginning. So I would do a lot of readings, a lot of workshops. It was necessary because it goes back and forth in time so frequently in order for me to really just understand what was happening in the story. I needed to see it embodied pretty early on and pretty regularly. And then I would, when I was having alone time with the play on the page or on the computer screen, I would look at the present day, the present day arc between these two characters, Eve and Micah, and all those scenes, when you see the play, they're all split apart, but I would put them all in order together so I could understand that arc, and then separately all the other time shifts, all the other places that the places and times of the play goes, I would try and put them in their own little orders and then break it apart again and put it back together again and break it apart again, et cetera, over and over and over again until I got what for me was a really satisfying narrative. And then I wanted to make sure that the triggers from or the transitions from each little scenelet to scenelet from one time space to another, that they were linguistically triggered. So I went back in and layered that in. But it was that repeat many times over more years than I care to admit to.
Okay. Well, we're talking about writing, and we're talking probably to a lot of writers, eventually people who listen to this. And playwriting has been called a writer's medium. So I wonder for you where the overlap either began or was between the study of linguistics and the self-empowerment style movement like the one you depict in Complete.
I did the EST training as a child and as a teenager, or what it became. By the time I was a teenager, it was no longer called the EST training. And I was involved so that was childhood and teenagehood. Then I went to college, and I started studying philosophy, and very soon figured out that I didn't know what I wanted to study. and then I happened upon this strange thing I had never heard of called linguistics. No one had ever mentioned linguistics to me in high school. We took languages, you know, we had French, we had Spanish, we had Latin, we had English class, but the structure of language, the science of language, never heard of it.
Hmm.
Went to a linguistics class. What was my first linguistics class at UC Santa Cruz? It was not Introduction to Linguistics. It was phonology. It was phonetics.
Okay.
Which is the study of the sounds that we make with our mouths to make language, and was blown away. And then I took Syntax 1 and Semantics 1 and was like, why did no one ever teach this to me in school? And then I realized that all along growing up, I had been a baby linguist from the time I was very young. But people don't know what linguistics is. I mean, a lot of people don't, and people in my family certainly didn't. So nobody recognized that I was a baby linguist and that I was obsessed with language growing up. but I could not have told you that. I was one of those teenagers who would correct my friend's grammar. It's completely reprehensible. It's just, it's completely, I can't say enough about that. It's the worst thing ever. And I feel like this is what happens. This is what happens to those children who are language obsessed. But never learn about linguistics.
Ah.
We turn into the grammar police, some of us. I mean, not all of us, but some of us turn into the grammar police because we don't know how to direct our obsession with language. And I have heard some linguists actually talk about this, that before they discovered linguistics, they were like that. And I was like, wow. It's heartening to hear. But anyway, so as a little child, I was fascinated by the way that my grandmother pronounced things. Certain things were different from how I pronounced them. I grew up in eastern Massachusetts. I had a Boston accent. It was total classic working class. What's an example? Oh my God, I'm going to the store. I gotta go get a package of cigarettes. I gotta go get a pack of cigarettes. I'm going to the store to get a pack of cigarettes for my mother. You coming? So that's the kind of stuff. Complete with going to the store to buy a package of cigarettes for my mother.
You could be in any Ben Affleck movie now.
Right. I think that's ridiculous. That's the example I came up with. I'm going to the store to buy a pack of cigarettes for my mother. Because that kind of thing was going on as well. So, with my cousins and friends and whatnot. My grandmother, Boston Irish, Charlestown Irish, she said, she didn't say bottle, like a lot of Americans say bottle with this tap D in the middle, and butter. She said bottle. So the middle of the word bottle for her was what's called a glottal stop. It's in the back of your throat, your glottis. And as a kid, I was fascinated. I was like, Graham, why do you say bottle? And she didn't even know what I was talking about. She could not hear that I said bottle and she said bottle. And that is actually fairly typical. I think most people do not hear those differences. But if you are the language-obsessed baby linguist, this is what your world is made of. So that was just one little example of, like, you know, being a six-year-old and hearing these things. And my father pronounced water, water. And I was like, where do you get that? Well, his parents are from Brooklyn, and I don't know what, I don't think people in Brooklyn say water, but something was translated in some different way, and he didn't say water the way the rest of us. Well, I didn't say water either. I said wada as a kid. But
how does that early obsession kind of translate to the world of complete then, to where you're
right.
connecting these two very important parts of your reality?
So I get to college, and so this is real life. I get to college, I discover this thing called linguistics, and I'm astounded, and my world is blown wide open. But I do not want to become an academic.
Mm-hmm.
And so then in college after my 20s, after college in my 20s, I was coming to terms with how I was raised. And one of the ways I was raised was after the age of 8 in the S organization. Not that that was what it was called, but and thinking about how we spoke. In that. And then because I had this linguistics degree, I couldn't help but analyze on a technical level what were we doing with language. So I was personally very interested in this in my personal life, and then I was becoming a writer, and so I was writing about it, wanted to write a fictional account about it. I didn't want to go out. I didn't want to go out into the world and write an essay about it or a personal, not like a memoir. I wanted to write fiction, and yet I wanted to analyze some of the actual language that is not fiction, but I wanted to put it in a story that was fiction. So it's very interesting to me to just think about the language that we were using in Est. On a very basic level, I just thought it was very compelling and interesting to look at the language, to look at language the way it's used by the training in the play, which is a large group awareness training, and to juxtapose it with the study of the scientific study of language, which is very precise. And I wanted to see that those two things on stage together, separately, I should say. I wanted to see scientific linguistic analysis of syntax and semantics on stage, and I wanted to see the dramatic use of training jargon in interpersonal relationships and in interactions within the training room. And then I like seeing those two worlds on the stage at separate points, and then they sort of, what does my mind as an audience member do when I'm looking at a linguistic analysis of syntax and semantics, and I'm looking at the use of jargon in a very emotional, very visceral interaction between a trainer and a program attendee. And what happens to me as an audience member is very interesting. I start, language floats around for me, and I come to lots of new thoughts about it, and I just like doing that. And then I also wanted to see what happens when linguistic analysis is in the same scene as training jargon and what sort of explosions happen there. So that's what inspired me.
It is definitely a different theatrical experience, having seen it last night. Also, the other things that you don't normally think of as supporting that, like the set, is really very supportive. There's literally words all over the set. There's words on the ground. There's words in the books, on the chalkboard. The background kind of looks like paper, raw paper. So there is a sense of words literally being everywhere around these characters.
Yeah, Joelle Devy did a really beautiful job with that set.
There's also a very dreamlike sense of time in Complete. You kind of alluded to it earlier when you were talking about time, space, and different scenelets, I think you called them. So I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about how time plays a factor within the play.
In one sense, there's tremendous time pressure done in the play, in this present-day arc between these two linguistic students, Eve and Micah. They are about to present a paper together at the big National Linguistics Conference, and it's a big deal, especially for graduate students, and for Micah, it's his first time presenting a paper because he has a fear of public speaking, and for Eve, it's nothing, it's old hat. She's been presenting papers at conferences for years, but they're up in 45 minutes, and they are in the middle of having a fight, a farcical, physical fight in the hallway outside the conference room in the hotel where the conference is taking place. So they have about 45 minutes to pull their act together before they go in and present their paper to their colleagues. So there's that time pressure, and I really wanted that in the play. I wanted there to be, like, urgency embodied in time, in time pressure. And then the other ways that time works in this play would be those, the time shifts between those scenelets that are sudden and mostly unexpected.
I know that you've also had some success at the Fringe Festival. You've been to a couple of them, and I think you won the Creative Award for Best Production in Prague, as I understand. We have the Hollywood Fringe Festival coming up in June. I wondered if you would just talk to listeners about what that experience was like for you and what you got out of it.
Well, I'm a huge fan of self-producing in fringe festivals, or being produced in fringe festivals, which sometimes happens as well, or being invited to them, which sometimes happens. But I've self-produced in the New York International Fringe Festival, as well as I didn't self-produce in the Prague Fringe Festival, but somebody produced a play of mine in that festival, which is kind of like being self-produced because it wasn't a big producer. I'm a strong supporter of fringe festivals. I think they're incredibly important for independent artists. And my experience in fringe festivals has been all positive. In the New York International Fringe Festival and in the Encore series that follows the New York International Fringe Festival, and then at the Prague, and then subsequently the show that was produced at the Prague International Fringe Festival was invited to other fringe festivals, and so they ended up paying our way, which was fantastic. I didn't actually go because my daughter was really young at the time, and so I stayed home in New York. But the actress, you know, she went, and so the production's way was paid. So I didn't get to go to the international fringe, the ones that were in other countries, but the show that was produced there really had great success, and the actress Harmony had a wonderful time, and that show is human fruitful. But at home in New York, I love being part of the New York International Fringe Festival, and I recommend it to anybody who is an independent artist and is not already being produced by other entities with lots of money. So I just think it's a wonderful opportunity, and they're so incredibly organized. They know exactly what to do, and they know exactly what to tell you to do. So it's a really well-oiled machine, and the present company who produces it is really generous.
Cool.
I love fringe festivals.
And is it? Do you think it's primarily a great way just to A, get produced, or B, kind of hear the work out loud and to do some experimenting and changing, or both?
Oh, definitely both. Yeah, okay. It's a great place to experiment, absolutely, and to share the work. But it's a wonderful way to produce or be produced, absolutely.
And I always like to ask, in conclusion, kind of what you're working on now, and I couldn't resist, and what you're creating yourself into being next.
No, you couldn't resist. I totally understand.
I could not resist
no,
that.
No, there's no way you can possibly resist that. No, I understand. I am working on a commission for a women's project. It's called Money, and I'm excited about it. And I'm finishing a play that takes place, which had a name, and the name is now changing, so I don't know the name of it, but I'm finishing this other play, which takes place in Somerville, Massachusetts, a fictional Somerville, I should say, which is a working-class city right next to Boston that has been being gentrified at this point for about 15 years, but not all pockets of it have been gentrified. It's about a pocket that is being gentrified, although that's the backdrop of the story, but that's not the circumstance of the story. It's about a family pub and some cousins. So, yeah, I'm excited about finishing those plays.
Excellent. Well, I want to thank you for taking your time to talk to me today and wish you good luck with the run.
Thank you.
Well, Complete runs at the Matrix Theater through March 30th, and it's directed by Jennifer Chambers and stars Meredith Bishop, Scott Cruz, Scott Victor Nelson, and Hannah Victoria Stock. For more information about tickets, please visit www.plays411.com/complete or call the box office at 323-960-8822. For more information about LAFBI's resources, activities, and opportunities, please visit www.lafbi.com.